This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 760, brought to you by Mack Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com/iFanboy and enter the promo code iFanboy. And of course, listeners just like you, you're out there, you're washing your hands, you're wearing your masks, you are doing the right thing so that we can all get through this together. I'm going to keep saying that. Deal with it. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 760. Those numbers.
It's a big round
they
one.
They keep going up. Yeah. This is, so that makes this an all-star anniversary double-sized issue.
No, the 75s, 25s, the 50s. The 60s never got the love that the five, the, you know.
Right, but I'm saying from now on, every even number is a special edition.
Every even number?
Yeah, we're just, wow. You know what, we're just going to get there. Basically, any integer is
any non-prime number?
All numbers get a trophy. I'm Josh Flanagan. This is my co-host Connor Kilpatrick, and the two of us have run out of math knowledge at this
point. I'll be honest with you though. The way we keep going long, every episode is a special long episode.
It's true. And if nothing else, we've built up a bank so that when there is one that's really special and that we don't notice, like a 75 or something, and it's just normal, we're covered.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, cool. Good job.
Well, it's a comic book show, so we have to follow the aesthetic of the thing. Mm-hmm. Also, we're going to renumber. This is two now.
Just gonna two legacy 760.
Yeah. .if. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks the one they like best. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, listener mail, if we have time. It will be fun. There will be spoilers. If you like don't care about that, then fine. But if you do, go screw. Connor's final pick of 2020, when I looked at it and read it, was in no way a surprise, and I don't even think we need to have this conversation.
Well, this was a crazy week. I mean, I was looking forward to it because this is my last pick of the year, and I thought, oh, what am I going to get to read? And it was like every major book came out this week. Mm-hmm. And as I sat down to read on Tuesday, because that's when DC books come out now, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a really hard week. And it turned out to be pretty easy. Much to probably a lot of people's surprise, the pick of the week is Justice League, Endless Winter number one, Andy Lanning and Ron Marz writing, Howard Porter on art, Hi-Fi and World Design on support, colors, and letters. And I wasn't even sure I was going to read this week. I think we made fun of it last week.
I don't remember that because I had never heard of it. And when I saw the
bleak winter poetry, you remember that joke last week? That was from this ad for this book.
So when I saw the title, I assumed... I must have gone right past it and sort of the books available, but I assumed that it was one of those anthologies. And I was like, oh, right. That son of a bitch did one of those 80-page anthologies again. And then I thought, oh, I'll take a look. And I read it. Mm-hmm. Go on. You can talk about it.
Well, so we had two events, and this is, I'm just putting events in quotes. Two of these kind of books come out this week, one from Marvel, one from DC, and I wasn't quite sure if I was going to read either of them. I ended up reading both just because. And it was, I was about, well, let's see, one, two, three, four pages into this one when I went, oh. And the reason I went, oh, was because Howard Porter drew this. This was very much a classic JLA lineup. They introduced the characters like they used to do in JLA, the Grant Morrison Howard Porter book back in 1996 with their, you know, their logos when they appeared in a dramatic fashion. And as I said on Instagram in the Best of the Week in Panels feature, the speed at which I was returned to 1996 was sort of breathtaking. Mm-hmm. And I don't – we've been reading a lot of Howard Porter books, and we really like Howard Porter. I know he's very controversial among newer readers, but we like him a lot. And the wave of JLA nostalgia hit me really hard reading this book, and not just from the art. I thought the writing from Andy Lanning and Ron Mars was incredibly fun. And – this, if you had to, if you put a gun to my head, this might have been the best issue of a JLA comic since 2010, mm-hmm. since the reboot.
I would say that, I mean, Howard Porter being there as a certain flavor yep. was definitely part of the package, but it really put me in the mind that there's a lot of guys who don't write mainstream comics anymore for whatever reason, or, you know, aren't on the A-list roster. You know, and they kind of got knocked out of it. Andy Lanning, he was an inker. I don't know if he even still inks, but he had had a long storied runs on books with his partner Dan Abnett. Dan Abnett, and then they had, and those books were great. Like, they basically created everything that those Guardians of the Galaxy's movies are.
Oh, yeah. If you're enjoying those movies, then you owe them a debt of gratitude.
Yeah. And then they had some sort of split, the details of which I don't really know about. I know that we interviewed the two of them at one point, and they seem like awful fun chaps. You know, and then Abnett did more things. Lanning on his own didn't do too much. Ron Mars, you know, guy I've known forever, you know, and a really strong writer. And, I think he kind of fell out of favor because of new style versus old style. But I actually think that he traverses that ground really well. And I've never actually seen him co-write something with somebody. So I don't know how this worked. But I was really like, you know, it would be really fun if more of these kinds of guys from the early 2000s, late 90s, like, you know, who were doing great works. These are the people who brought comics back, by the way. You know, from nothing, and then we're into whatever it is we're into now. But I just like, oh, this feels like a superhero comic, and I think that you're right. And then I was like, oh, this is a Justice League book. I don't remember the last time I read a Justice League book that felt anything like this.
Exactly. There's this weird ineffable feeling about it that, like, I don't get from the current Justice League book. I haven't gotten it in a long time. I don't think I've got it in the New 52 era at all. And it's this. It was fun. It was joyful. It had stakes. The characters all had fun moments. There's a through line in which the Flash is worried about work-life balance, so he's consulting all of his teammates throughout the issue. And the big story here is that so Superman, it's loosely tied to continuity. Superman, you know, moved the Fortress of Solitude. I think it's in the Bermuda Triangle now, and because that stupid villain destroyed it, and so these evil corporate excavators are going there to see what they can get from the old site, and they find some old Kryptonian crystals and things that are in the snow. So they're excavating that, and in the course of doing that, they have awakened an old sort of frost giant god, and that's the Frost King. And so that's the big
weak
story
name,
here.
If I'm going to be honest, it's a weak name, but
they ran out of time. The Frost King, sure.
And so it doesn't matter. Nobody cares about that. Let's have Flash talk about his life.
Right, and that's sort of the main thrust here, is that this they awaken this giant. He brings winter to the world. So we see all the, you know, Gotham, Manhattan, Washington, Metropolis, Kondak, all the main places in the DC universe, you know, covered in snow and ice, and the Justice League has to stop. And there's a nice little flashback with fun art. I didn't write down that artist's name in the script. I forgot, but. It just felt like a Justice League book, and I don't know, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about the Justice League and the Avengers books. Both of them used to be the spine of each respective universe. Neither one of them is anymore. They're both sort of afterthoughts. No one talks about them. They're not important. And Because I think they're missing a spark. They're both missing a spark. And this book had that spark. I don't know why. The other artist was
Marco Santucci.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it had to do with it was kind of fun. Like they brightened up the colors a little. You know, like it there was the stuff going on, but they all seemed to like each other. There wasn't mm-hmm. as much grim, I think. Yeah. You know, like when Aquaman showed up, the mm-hmm. way that he you know, his countenance was sort of how he smiles in the second panel. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, they're buddies. And that kind of makes it more fun. In fact, that's, I think, a lot of what is working over in the deceased stuff, you know, is yep. that they're buddies.
Yeah.
And they like each other. And you get to see that relationship a little bit. You see them as humans. And like, so if you think back to, what was the Marvel one that just happened with all the plant people?
Oh, I've already forgotten.
Yeah, well, that exactly. But I was thinking about
Empire?
Yes, Empire with a Y. I think back to those, like, well, okay, when those first issues, were they fun?
Yeah.
Were they like, were. Do you want to hang out with those people? I know, but like, kind of, but it sort of goes away.
No, like, we liked that first issue because it was like that, and then it got all
And then everything gets all serious and gritted teeth, and I just think that's less, it might be us, it might be the times, it might be a combination, but it's just less fun, it's less endearing, I think, and you, like... You know, it's the 86 problem. We're always kind of getting sucked back into the well, and sometimes that stuff's pretty good. But then every once in a while, something comes along, and you got your Flash and Superman on a page, and it's a sunny day, and you're like, oh, that's what comics should feel like. Or at least that's what, you know, enough of them should feel like.
This is consciously recalling those JLA books.
Oh, totally.
I mean, the way that they're, first of all, Howard Porter, the way they're introducing the characters, the first time you see Batman, he sort of crouched in the shadows, very much like the first time we saw him in the first issue of JLA. You know, Aquaman and Wonder Woman were very much a pair in that book. They're paired up here. It's very much like, it's also almost the classic lineup. We're missing Martian Manhunter. I kept hoping he would show up.
Yeah.
Because of that, even though this is John Stewart instead of Kyle Rayner, and this is Barry Allen instead of Wally West, it very much is the way that those books sort of laid out their stories. They were pairing the characters up and, you know, facing a story bigger than them. Plus, you know, great human moments. I like the Flash visiting Black Lightning and his family because
that was my
his family's very, very stable.
It was a little bit of a whiplash from that last Black Lightning story I read a week ago. I was like, this guy's doing fine. He's all right. And also that drawing makes him look super short. It's not Howard Porter's finest moment, but
no, that's not a great panel. I mean, we admit it. He's had hand problems. He can be wonky sometimes, but everyone's a little squat in that panel. But
yeah, but you know, like the
also
feeling.
The Flash is looking right at us, which is unsettling.
Stop looking at me. Yeah, but like, I mean, that kind of scene in the middle of it, and I guess the fact that this is like is this the start of an event, or is this like an event series?
It's kind of like next week. There's a super. It okay. happens in the Flash book, and then there's a Superman special. I think it's happening over a course of a couple of
it's
books
in the current continuity.
Yeah, because Aquaman is talking about getting married here, and he's getting married in his book, so it's in the continuity.
It almost feels
the next
like,
issue continues in the Flash 767, so it's going through like the books.
It's like a little revolt.
Yeah,
it's like let's make comics a little fun. Let's back up. I mean, I guess if you keep metal over on one side, you know, and you keep Tom King's Batman over one place or whatever, then you have room for this. And mm-hmm. it's not that those things are bad, but I think that, you know. I'm trying to think of a metaphor for what it's like, but you know, it's, you know, you're in your house, you've got the curtains drawn and you're, you know, I'm playing a video game and it's nice in here or whatever. Then you open the windows and you go, oh, it's really nice outside. Like that's kind of what, you know what I mean? Like it's just like, oh, look at that. I forgot about the sun. And that is kind of what this feels like, both visually and, you know, with us, I think there's definitely a throwbacky thing. And I'd be interested to see how younger readers or people who came along at a different time react to it.
If this continues through other creative teams, you know, so if it's unless these three people are doing all those chapters, it could feel very different. And it could just be that we've happened to happen before where the introductory issue is terrific and then the rest of them sort of falter. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but it could happen. And we'll see if that does happen. I did enjoy there was a little line here where Flash and Superman are talking where Superman says, I really thought that revealing my identity would be a good idea. I was like, yeah, you did, didn't you? That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that sort of subtle commentary in a couple of those.
I mean, the whole thing is a very general commentary, I think.
Yeah.
Everything about it, like from the, who edited this? Because, you know, you're putting Mars and Lanning on it. So those are both people from more or less a different era in comics.
10 years ago.
You know, they're not going to.
10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, you know, the Green Lantern stuff was mid-late 90s.
Alex Carr, the editor.
Yeah. So, and then Howard Porter being cast here. Hi-Fi Colors, like all of this is, it's like, let's do these kind of books again and see how it goes. And, well, it's good for us.
Yeah. I had a great time reading books this week. The heavy hitters really delivered. I had fun, but I think I read this one fairly early on in the process, and I was like, man, that was really fun. And I kept thinking about it as I would read more books. I kept going back to the issue in my head.
Actually, I don't think that we pointed it out, but like sort of the beginning segment where the, you know, the four B-lister supervillains are like, all right, we figured something out, and then everybody shows up. And the way that they revealed that was really fun too, because I don't know, I had no idea what this was. I barely looked at the cover. I just started reading it because you picked it. And all of a sudden, Green Lantern and Flash shows, like, oh, that's kind of fun. And then Superman and Wonder Woman show up. And then I was like, oh, wow, this is like a Justice League fighting supervillains adventure. You know, and
right, it's great.
Yeah, like, and it's just, it was so novel that, like, I was like, oh, I just wasn't prepared. And then and it's like immediately I was like, oh, I see why Connor picked this. There's no doubt about that.
We've been doing this a long time, and we talked about it before. You know, oftentimes the way we read is different from what other people read, and you know, if I keep thinking about a book as I'm reading other books, that's usually the sign, yeah. You know, like if I finish a book, oh, that was really good. And then my mind goes back to the scene with Clark and Barry talking or Aquaman showing up. Then I go, well, that's probably it. And then when I finished all my books, I was like, man, the most fun I had reading was Justice League Endless Winter. And there you go.
Yep.
Now I was wavering for a minute about Fantastic Four Road Trip. It's number one, but it's a one shot. Christopher Cantwell, Philippe Andrade, terrific team.
Fantastic Four body horror. It should.
And if you took the first 5 or 10 pages, this could have made a contender. Body horror, not for me, but man, I again wasn't necessarily planning on reading this, but I saw the creative team and I was like, well, Cantwell's on a run and Andrade's terrific, so I picked it up. And Fantastic Four on a road trip. Things go really wrong for them on the road trip because of Reedness. And up until the thing's skin started coming off, I was all in on this. And then I was like, ugh, for the rest of the issue.
I mean, if you're into that kind of thing, it was very effectively done. It's just a matter of, like, and I think there was a sound effect, like a, you know, and was, oh, I don't want that. I've had nightmares about that kind of thing. Like, actual literal nightmares about that very thing that the thing is going through there. And but in terms of characterization, in terms of sort of the internal turmoil of a family and the, you know, the father's ineffable hubris, like he just like he cannot get out of his own way. And the last page is he hasn't learned a damn thing.
No.
And it was really well done. I think I talked about this last week, is there's been this through line of Cantwell, what he seems to do really well in all the comic book works and then over in Halt and Catch Fire, is a very smart man who means to do well, who can't get out of his own damn way.
Yeah.
And
that's Dr. Doom, that's Tony Stark, that's Reed Richards.
That's Gordon and Joe.
Yeah.
From Halt and Catch Fire. You know, that's the pattern that's going on here. And he does it so well. You know, like, I read this, and I've been enjoying the living crap out of the regular Fantastic Four book that's going on right now. But I was like, this is great. This is a fine Fantastic Four book. And I think if Cantwell's thing is going to be to drop in and do 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 issues or something, you know, and maybe not do a 50-issue run or something like that. Mm-hmm. Great, do that. Come and make a mark on these, like set a bar almost.
Also, if he wants to just keep doing like one shots like this, you know, like So I mean, the top line is that the Fantastic Four is on a road trip. It's the family plus the kids plus Alicia, and it doesn't include the other kids. It doesn't include Johnny's weird girlfriend. It's in continuity, but it's also a one shot sort of out of continuity.
It's just and, the family. I mean,
yeah, it's just the family, and Alicia is married to Thing, so it's just the family. And although they adopted the kids, it doesn't matter. The point is, it's in the continuity, but it's not in the continuity.
Right.
And Reed wants, they're on a road trip to the Grand Canyon, and Reed wants to, which by the way, is a long road trip from New York. And Reed wants to check out a meteor crater.
He created a wormhole between New Jersey and like the edge of Colorado. That's because otherwise it's just corn.
Yeah. And he goes to excavate this site, and he wants to study these soil samples, and turns out a supervillain, knowing their trip, knowing Reed, set this up, poisoned the samples, which causes all of the Fantastic Four to experience various body horrors, and it's terrible. And then of course they end up saving the day. But I really loved all the character stuff. I actually really loved the part where Franklin keeps multiplying. Mm-hmm. The sequence where he's all over the house and Reed is like sort of watching him, watching it happen, but quietly.
Yeah.
And then he's like, Franklin, something wrong. Why? Well, you're simultaneously in every part of the house right now. And it was like very sort of calm. And
it wasn't clear what was happening either. Like I thought time was passing.
Right.
And he was looking at the kid be bored in all these different places. So that was really well executed. And there's a line a bit later where they go to explain it. And it's like, I don't know where I am. I don't know which one. And it's really well written. And it's funny. This is two books in a row where we talked about the fact that there are just some supervillains.
Yeah.
Some old school, you know, supervillains.
Mad Thinker, right?
Isn't it weird that that's novel?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, like there's always, a lot of books now seem to focus on a supervillain. So the story really just seems to be over, you know, in Batman, the book is mostly Batman versus Joker. That's kind of what it is and has been for a long time. You know, Superman is Superman versus Lex Luthor. Oh, but more in a nemesis thing than a fighting thing. You know, like that's what all the books have become. It's Daredevil versus Kingpin. It's not Kingpin shows up every once in a while. Those villains are constant. So we don't have these adventures, you know, with these silly villains. And they should not all comics should be like that, but it's becoming clear there's not enough of them.
Yeah. And I just want to mention that Felipe Andrade is incredible. God. And whenever he shows up on a book, he's not the kind of artist that's going to do like a run. He's not going to draw Fantastic Four, but man, if he wanted to, it would be terrific. I love how lanky Reed is.
Yeah.
I love his thing.
In fact, the way that he draws Reed, you know, there's times where I was like, well, is he supposed to be stretchy here or, you know, is that just how you're doing him? And then what happened was slowly over the course of this issue, all of those exaggerations started to get more exaggerated.
Yeah.
And so like you actually kind of watch it all happen slowly.
Yeah. You don't even realize that he's having a problem. Like he's got to pour his arm into a bucket because he's been lanky the whole time.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, really beautiful. It's beautiful work. It really is.
The opening with Reed as Clark Griswold was great.
It was.
Get a load of those denuded rock formations. So, the book we never thought we'd see, Batman, Catwoman number one, Tom King, Clay Mann, Tomu Murray, Clayton Cowles. This was supposed to be the final arc for Tom King on Batman. It was moved to its own book. Now it's a Black Label book. So take that for what you want it to be.
We're about to see boobs is what you're saying.
I'm just saying it doesn't really – It is in no way lined up with what's happening in the other Batman books, so it's sort of off on its own thing, which is fine. This is very much following a pattern of Tom King first issues in which we don't really know what we're in for yet.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. This jumps all over the place in terms of time, even scene to scene, panel to panel. It's present, it's future, it's past. And so by the end of it, I was like, oof, there's a lot. There's a lot there.
Yeah,
I liked it. I enjoyed it, but it's hard to jump on. It's hard to get your emotional investment not exactly knowing what's going on, which is the fine, you know, is how he usually starts his books. And that's fine.
And I think that's right. It did feel like I was like this. I don't know if it was adjusted or what, but I said, yeah, this would be really out of place in the regular Batman book.
It doesn't work. No, they moved on different things.
And that's fine. I do think that the time jumping at a certain point wasn't particularly well handled, because it was too intense and there were not enough signifiers that things were different, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, the only way that you could tell, I think, in the beginning, I don't think I picked up on the fact that Selina had, like, grayish hair. I thought that was just sort of had to do with the coloring. And then I was like, oh, is this the future? Because, and they finally close up on her and you see, like, there's some wrinkles on her face. And so, and that's not bad. That's kind of a subtle reveal. I just, you know, it took me a little while to pick up on all those signals. And then, you know, you're wondering who she's talking to. Then we zip back, you know, to her and Batman. And then we move around in time a bunch of times. Like you said, within the same page. And right. That starts to get, that's difficult. But again, if you know Tom King and you sort of know what, look, okay, this is his pattern, that's fine. But that requires a lot of a reader, because this isn't new reader friendly, I don't think, even in terms of story or in terms of like technique, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think I enjoyed it.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it a lot. I'm a big Clayman fan. You probably don't love him, because he's like on the Jim Lee spectrum, but he's much more fluid and lively.
It's the way that he draws the characters is not my favorite kind of figure drawing, but you know, like everybody's like, you know, hulking bodies and you know, which kind of makes sense, and everything's like,
everybody's sexy.
Yeah, that's what I was literally, this is my next sentence. Everybody's super sexified, like Selina gets in bed and she's got a full like you know, lingerie outfit on, you know. I was like, that's,
well, Selina wouldn't own any non sexy lingerie.
That's true. But even so, it's a process, you know, but the thing is, it's always like that. And then, so we get into the sort of main story, you know, where it's this woman, Andrea Beaumont. Now, is that the Mask of the Phantasm?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Is that exist in comics, or is that just taken from the other thing?
I think it has. Yeah, I mean, well, it's complicated. The character that happened in the movie was sort of based on a character from the comics, the Reaper. It was Batman Year 2, the Alan Davis stuff. Yeah. It's not exactly a one-to-one. This feels like him bringing Mask of the Phantasm into his DC continuity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we have Andrea Beaumont showing up. We have allusions to her becoming the Phantasm again. We have Catwoman in Florida. What did you think of the future bit?
I liked it, sort of. I mean, I think like this is a version of this is your spoiler. I don't know how to talk about this otherwise. This is a version of the Joker that I think doesn't necessarily, like, I don't necessarily want the books, but it's interesting in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes.
I like his sort of calm, non-threatening relationship with Selina.
Right.
You know, like they kind of talk like colleagues, you know, as they get away from the office, you know, and it's kind of interesting. I really like the outfit that, I don't know if that's is that the Killing Joke outfit that she has, that he has Joker standing in at that one point on page 19.
No, it's I like it. Sort of like a cool 20s,
yeah,
20s gangster Joker. It's not the Killing. I mean, if anything, it's closer to the Dark Knight Returns when he wore that white suit.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it reminded me of. I think I have that figure. That's actually meant to say that instead of Killing Joke. You know, again, that's the thing I like about Clayman. I think the design of this stuff is just super cool and sexy. And even on that other page where she's, you know, in her Suicide Girls pose, you know, the wrinkles on the bed sheets and everything, like there's some really great stuff there. I think I liked it.
It's okay if you can like it.
Yeah.
I thought it was fine. I didn't, you know, it didn't blow me away, but I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to reading more of it.
It's not my favorite kind of thing, but it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of the things Tom King has been interested in Batman and just bring them together. He's clearly interested in that whole animated world. He said that in the beginning of his run, but that sort of fell off. But then his use of like the silly villains like Calendar Man shows all that stuff. And, you know, he likes the Catwoman-Batman relationship, and that's been important to his run. And so he's bringing sort of all the elements of his run together here, I feel like.
Yeah, and he's good at it, so it works.
But yeah, I think you said what I was feeling is that this is great as a sort of out of continuity Black Label story. I wouldn't want this to be in continuity.
I think at a certain point, and you know, maybe this is, you know, kind of kudos in a way to DC editorial. I don't really like the way it played out, but you know, maybe moving it over there where they saw it was going, and then also, you know, Tom King for sort of doing a story and sticking to it. And they're like, we can't do this in the main book. And they figured out kind of a solution to let him finish his story his way. It was a little inelegant, but in the end, it was probably the right thing to do on both fronts.
Yeah. I don't think you could have done any other Batman books in conjunction with a book like this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It would have been too hard.
Especially if in the middle of it, they were like, it's endless winter time. And he was like, no.
So speaking of making you work for it, Strange Adventures number 7 of 12, Tom King, Mitch Gerrits, Evan Doc Shaner, Clayton Cowles. I liked this issue, even though it was a whiplash of what the hell's going on until almost the very end of it. It felt very much like that issue of Batman he did with Mitch Gerrits, where Batman was being tortured mentally, and it was like every couple of pages it changed. Do you remember that issue?
Yeah, I do.
It felt much like that one.
I gotta say, this is a 12 issue, right?
Yeah.
I can't say that this has hooked me yet.
I think this is, and I don't know what to say about it yet, because I think, again, with all these issues, you got to look at them as all these series, you got to look at them as a whole piece. But between Mr. Miracle and the Vision, I wouldn't put Sheriff of Babylon in even those 12 issues. This is probably the least emotionally I've been involved in one of these books. I really like it. I'm very excited when it comes out.
Yeah. I think it's the strongest art out of any of those books. Well, Mr. Miracle is pretty amazing, but I think the Doc Shaner stuff really adds something to these. Yep. It's just that I get it. There's a PTSD element to it, but I'm not.
Oh, for sure,
like,
yeah.
If you were to tell, like, if you want me to synopsize the story right now, I don't think I could do it. Like, I kind of, like, there was some shit that happened. And then something else happened, and now no one trusts him, and Mr. Terrific is looking into it. I don't know. I think I need some kind of hook. So we're largely leaning on the idea about sort of trust in the creators. And at a certain point, that can come back at you. You know, that doesn't always work, and I want a little bit of reassurance that I'm going into a place. So, like, basically I'm coasting on craft here, not emotion.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Which is the opposite of how you felt about your pick of the week this week.
Right.
Which is like the craft is really secondary to how this makes me feel.
And the craft is incredibly high.
Oh, my goodness.
Here. So, there's a lot going on. The Picts, I think, are invading Earth. There's a scene of Batman is fighting the Picts with Adam Strange. But meanwhile, Adam Strange is being tortured. He got captured by the Picts, so he's being tortured, and mentally they keep sending him places that are terrible, and then they bring him back, and they take him.
I feel like Dark Helmet, and I need Colonel Sanders to explain to me when now is, because I don't know.
When is now?
When?
Now is then.
Was it then? No, we just
missed
it. It was
then. Now it's now. We just missed it. Now it's now. Yeah, and then, you know, there's the whole idea is what happened to their daughter. The hints have been that she may still be alive or something happened. And now Alana, based on the last issue with her conversation with Mr. Terrific, is very suspicious of her husband now, too. And so that's interesting. Aaliyah. Why did I say Alana? I don't know her name. That's why.
Alana the wife's name? That.
What's the is the daughter Aaliyah?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Olivia Munn.
Olivia Munn, the daughter.
No, the wife, Olivia Munn. Anyway, I liked it. Afterward, I was like, "Oof, that was an interesting journey," which is good. I'll take this all day long as opposed to a mundane, you know, book that's middle of the road.
I think that yes, but I don't want all my books to be like this. So like,
no,
you know,
definitely not.
You can. This is a special thing, and I give it a lot of leeway and a lot of allowance, and I. 97% sure that at the end I'm going to say, oh, that was worth it. That was really, but.
Well, we have 5 issues to go. Mm-hmm. So we're just past the halfway point, and it is eventually going to have to start becoming clear. Now, Mr. Miracle didn't really become clear until issue 12. And once it did become clear, it all made sense. So
yes, you know. But The other thing about that was there was a lot of, it's the same thing. There was a lot of quirky bits in that. There was some fun, mm-hmm. you know, like there were segments and, you know, the relationship between Barda and Scott was interesting to watch the whole way through. And like they were going through some stuff. This is all mystery. Like, I don't know where anyone is coming from except for Mr. Terrific. I know where he's coming from and he hasn't been in it for a couple of issues.
Well, he was in the last issue. That was the whole issue with him.
I know. Yeah. It's okay. It's been one. But you know what I mean? Like, I think the little bit of that playfulness isn't in this, that it was in the other one. Or if it is, I it's harder to pick up on or putting out context.
Before we move on, it was revealed that Adam Strange did kill that dude in the first issue, mm-hmm. which was the big thing in the beginning of the story, was the murdered fan or the guy who was attacking him about being a war criminal. He did murder. He did kill him, thinking he was a picked agent.
Right.
Now, was he a picked agent or was it PTSD that caused him to do it? We don't know.
I think they sort of said that he was. I don't know. He still thinks it was.
He thinks he wasn't, but then he's not sure.
Right.
Or he said, I don't think there was no evidence, but he had no picked DNA, but I'm pretty sure he was a picked agent. So
here's what I know. Tom King went through some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's brave as shit to put it into this form and do something just on a personal level. Like, even if it's not him that went through it, like, you know, he saw it, he observed it, what a weird story to get to be a point where you're a premier comic book writer. What a path.
Let's take a quick break and talk about Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is a premium men's essential brand that believes in a smart design and high quality fabrics. Josh, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now, and we'll talk about that in a second. Mack Weldon offers a one-stop shop.
My mind goes to what detail are we going to talk about?
The socks. Everyone knows too much detail. That's the answer. Socks, shirts, hoodies, underwear, polos, active shorts, whatever you need, Mack Weldon has you covered. Unlike the assortment of department store brands that make up your top drawer, all of Mack Weldon's basics have a constant fit that you can count on. Why is Mack Weldon so awesome? Well, like I said, it's a one-stop shop. You got socks, you got shirts, you got hoodies, you got underwear, polos, active shorts. Mack Weldon promises comfort and a consistent fit, versatility. You're not just going to look great in Mack Weldon. Their underwear, socks, shirts perform well too, from working out to going out, going to work or on a date. Once we start doing all those things again, Mack Weldon is for everyday life. Right now, it's just for sitting on your couch or on Zoom.
Mack Weldon, also good for sitting.
It is.
It is. It's not wrong.
Also, great fabric and technology. Mack Weldon offers a wide range of customized fabrics that can keep up with you no matter what your day looks like. They got the 18-hour, they got the silver, they got the Air Knit X, the dry knit, the warm knit. Mack Weldon Blue. They've created a totally free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you free shipping for life. Once you reach level 2 by spending $200, Mack Weldon gets you 20% off your order for the next year. Every order for the year, you get 20% off once you hit level 2. And they've got a great guarantee. Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it and they'll refund you. No questions asked, which is a really great policy. It allows you to try, we've been telling you for years. You should just try it.
You should just try it.
And now there's no risk to you.
There was two things that I noticed mm-hmm. in there. One, they're not mentioning, but I want to. I was on there. I was browsing around as I'm wont to do. And they had these fancy flannel shirts. And I went, oh, that's for me. So I don't know if I'm going to put that on like a Christmas list or just pick one of those up, but that's going to be a thing. I am a big fan of putting a bunch of stuff in a cart and then looking at the total go way down from what I thought it was going to be. And so the 20% off with the thing, I'm a big fan of that. Cause all of a sudden it's like getting an instant discount on everything that you didn't really know how to expect. And I love that.
It's a nice little surprise.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm wearing Mack Weldon underwear right now.
Mm hmm.
It's comfortable. It's exciting. And this has been actually a Mack Weldon week, unintentionally. You know, like
it's
I said.
It's exciting.
It's all.
In the room and your wife hears you from the other. Woo, what's wrong? I just put my underwear on. It's cool. Don't worry about it. Woo.
It's all, you know, loungewear right now. So the other day I was a human mullet. I was business on the top. I was Mack Weldon Ace sweatpant on the bottom.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah, I did the Ace sweatpant on Thanksgiving.
Nice.
Well, but here's the thing. Like, I get dressed every day. Like, put on pants. I get excited when I can wear jeans again. You know, and my wife like notices this. And at some point during Thanksgiving, like I was running around and I was cooking. It's just me here with her. It wasn't like a big deal. But And he made this giant turkey for us and nobody ate it. But, you know, at one point I switched. I was like, I need to be comfortable right now. And Lindsay noticed it later. She was like, I noticed you changed out of pants. Like, it was really unusual for me to do. And I was like, yeah. I was excited that these were clean. So that's what I was. It was excited. That's what happened.
Well, they're nice tapered fit. They're mm-hmm. still fashionable, even if you're wearing, you know, you're not just wearing sweatpants. I also have the other pant, the indoor outdoor pant, which I yep. wear a lot because those are also comfortable and forgiving for sitting all day long, but also
they got a nice stretch. You know,
they don't look too bad no. when you're wearing them with other clothes. So we're a Mack Weldon family, Josh and I. We know that. You know that. Everyone listening knows that. Everyone's it's the whole, you know, everyone knows we're Mack Weldon fans. I'm wearing the blue underwear right now, the color blue. I don't know what actually line it is, but you should check it out. For 20% off your first order, go to MackWeldon.com/iFanboy. Enter promo code iFanboy. That code gets you 20% off your first order. MackWeldon.com/iFanboy, promo code iFanboy.
Put these on your lists. You tell your relatives or your spouses, like, hey, you know what? For this, I want a little something special. Why don't you give me something
special? And give them the code.
Yep.
And the thing is, like we said, there's a guarantee. If you don't like it, they'll refund you. There's almost no risk to you. But you're going to put it on and you're going to like it.
I mean, a pair of new underwear is always a risk, but I'm willing to give you I'm willing to vouch for it.
Your Josh Flanagan ironclad guarantee?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it holds no weight in any way, but I will vouch like a mafia member. Like, these underwear are a friend of ours.
Ooh. Wow. You're
That's a big deal. That could get me whacked.
Yeah.
Yep. I read, I want to say, about a half a page of The King in Black, and then I mm-hmm. skimmed for a little bit, and I thought, this looks awfully nice, and then I stopped.
Yeah, so I would, like I said earlier, this week we had the two sort of mini events come out. We had Endless Winter, and we had King in Black. King in Black is from Marvel. It's from Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman, J.P. Mayer, Frank Martin, Clayton Cowles, and this is Donny Cates is sort of internal event centered around Venom. He and Stegman have been doing Venom for a while. So I thought I wasn't going to read this. And I thought, well, I'm reading Endless Winter. I should read also King in Black. Hopefully it'll be fun because we like Donny Cates a lot. We like Ryan Stegman a lot. This was not fun. This was a mess. This, in terms of someone who's not been reading the book, this didn't do anything to help you. And this was just a gobbledygook of Venom creatures who I hate. I hate Venom anyway. So this is probably never going to work for me. Nothing to do with the craft. The craft was there. Stegman's Mark Farlane-inspired style is perfect for this kind of book, for these characters. Donny Cates knows how to write comics, write these characters. But the overall story was just they didn't help a new reader. It was a mess. And at the end of the day, I just don't like Venom. And so a story all about Venom symbiotes is not going to work for me. And also, you know, call me an old curmudgeon comic fan, but when Spider-Man got this Sympate in Secret Wars, it didn't have a spider on its chest because the spider came from Spider-Man. Like, the fact that these alien venoms also have spiders on their chest is stupid.
So your take on it is a little different than mine. Mine is, I don't get it. These people must, and good luck to you all. I don't even have any feelings about it. I have to assume that, you know, Cates is a heck of a writer, really cares. This is the kind of thing he likes. This is like black metal, not the comic books, the actual music genre. Like, God bless you. You know, that's your
thing. I'm not mad at it.
Yeah.
I'm not mad. I just finished it. I went, oh, well, that's too bad.
It's not even too bad. It's just like, you know, I'm not going to. It's a Hallmark movie, not my genre.
It's too bad because I was hoping I would like it. You know, I was hoping like it was going to be like a really fun thing.
And
it
wasn't.
I go into everything hoping I like it.
Right, but I would say that, you know, that would be inauthentic to the product to make it a thing that you like specifically. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like, it would not be what it is if it was the thing that you like, and then the people who like it would be like, what the heck is this crap?
Heads up, Josh. It's crossing over into Spider-Woman.
They need to fix that. That book.
The next issue, Spider-Woman.
Yeah, okay.
Crossing in. That's crossover.
Well, I can skip a month or I can.
Did you read The Union?
The Union? No. I downloaded it like I was going to read it and then didn't. Should I read it?
Man, that's all right.
That's what I figured. That Texas Blood number 6, I believe this felt like the end. Did this feel like this the was, end to you?
You didn't read the end, did you? The little essay.
No, of course not.
They this is the end of this story.
I shouldn't have to read an essay to know that it's the end of a story. Just
no. This is clearly the end of the story. Right, I thought from the research book, but this is the end of this story, and they're hoping to do more that Texas Blood as a book, probably as a Texas crime anthology.
Yeah. All right. Let's I gotta say the last two issues of this kind of went off a cliff for me.
Yeah, I didn't think this was that good. I thought this was a little confusing. I thought this came out of nowhere, actually. Well, that's what I'm looking through now.
Yeah, I thought I'd skipped an issue.
Yeah, all of a sudden it got wrapped up. I don't remember how it was revealed that the wife was the killer.
Nope.
And you know, I like this. I think
tonally, I think the dialogue was exemplary the whole way through. I just wanted to spend all my time with that sheriff guy. I think those were all good, but in terms of story structure and really, I felt like everything that was important happened off camera between issues. And I was like, what the hell just happened? I really thought that I had missed something. And I think that's it's a way to tell a story, but I think it was really ineffective here. I put that up to growing pains. I think it was really strong out of the start. And then the hard part is putting those pieces together in a way that is both compelling and clear enough. And I don't think that they succeeded at that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it as a series.
Yeah. I'm not upset that I read it. I'm not like angry at it. Like,
yeah,
for myself, that's the Sons of Anarchy effect, where I started watching and I was like, all right, this is into it. And then at a certain point I just got angry at it. I was like, I can't believe you made me waste my time with this garbage. I'm not there.
Yeah, I mean, I had the same thought you did. Like, well, did I miss something? Because it seemed like it all came together real quickly. In the end, it says, this issue concludes our first multi-issue story arc. I hope that you want more because we have more to give. So if we get more, I guess we'll depend.
I mean, theoretically, they'll get better.
Right.
You know, they have to. I want to say they're young, but I don't even know what that means, but at least inexperienced. But it's a good showing for inexperience, and they got a stage fairly early because of, let's be honest, there was probably some nepotism involved.
Yeah, they're doing more. He's sent the script to Jacob for the next part. So
good for them. I'll read more when it comes out. I like.
Yeah, definitely. It was overall fun, and there's no other books out there like this right now that I'm reading. So I enjoyed reading it. Spy Island number 4 also seemed to wrap up the story, I believe.
I had the same thought. It seemed to be the end of this.
Listen,
now,
it's on brand for us to not exactly know. And that's fine. That's what you get. That's what you tune in for. Chelsea Kane.
What about a panel at the end? Every comic book has panels. You could just write the end. Or to be continued. Come on. There's a lot going on.
Chelsea Kane, Elise McCall, Leah Metternich, Rachel Rosenberg, and then who let this guy in? Joe Caramagna.
Oh, look at this guy. Joey, what are you doing here?
What I like about this book...
That's racist.
And I've liked the whole way through is that it's absurd. And I had this thought reading, and what I'm about to say is not what I'm about to say. It's not Monty Python. It's not that level. Obviously, nothing is at that level. But it has that absurdity to it. You know, where like all of these wacky things happen, and it all just... You just go, okay. And the characters do absurd things, and it all makes sense, and it's funny, and I like it a lot.
What's interesting to me is that I usually don't like comics like this. This, to me, reminds me of like a Roots Matt Fraction kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I used to get annoyed by that. But for whatever reason, the particular flavors of what's in here between narrative and characterization and silliness really worked for me. You know, and that's a combination of the art, which is Gared's-like, I will say. Mm-hmm. You know, but
Steve Lieber-esque.
Yeah, that too. It's like Steve Lieber mixed with Mitch Gerads is you know, there's little bits that visually outside of just regular storytelling, like watching the little corgi in a bubble helmet swim underwater, you know, in sequence, it's funny. Like it's a funny image. If I could do a pick of the week for a concept, it's the mime smoking inside the underwater outfit. I was like, wait, is he smoking inside his helmet? And he is. And I think that's about as funny as anything can be.
We liked her last book, the cat book,
Maneaters.
But I like this one more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Maneaters lost its way, I think, about, and it was really interesting in the beginning. And I think by the end of it, it kind of lost its way. I think this was a nice short and sweet story.
You know what? There's one page in here. I want to say it's page 8, I think, where there's Freud's view of the human mind. Mm-hmm. And it goes down through this structure that I think it's the one that they were living in. And then, it's above water, and it goes down into the water, and all of the different bits are, it's just very funny. I don't even know how to explain it, and I don't want to, but if you read the book, you know what we're talking about. It was a really fun book. And I loved seeing there's a new issue and looking forward to it, because it was going to be unlike anything else.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention Deceased Dead Planet 6. This I also thought about for a minute for Pick of the Week, because so this is 6 of 7. So this is the penultimate issue. We've reached that tragic point in the story, which is that the cure has been found. The cure for this disease.
Mm-hmm.
The cure has been found simultaneously to an army of Amazo androids being unleashed on Earth just to kill all of the undead people who could now be cured. So we're watching all these people die who don't need to die.
Connor, I'm sensing a metaphor here.
Well, also,
what is it?
raise the stakes all the time. The devil shows up. So it's just, everything is happening really badly while, the tragedy of it is that they could be cured. So, like, they managed to cure Big Barda, and you're like, yay, triumph. And then right then, all of Paris is wiped out. So all the French are gone, all the Parisian French. So that's great storytelling, is you're raising the stakes constantly, and then you introduce, the ironic tragedy to it all.
He really, that is, we were talking about characterization, but his strength, who else is really good at this? Brian Vaughn was amazing at this. Characterization and then raising the stakes, the kill your babies, you're constantly on a yo-yo of safety and danger. And that, I think, is what's been going on. I thought it was really good. It was really good.
Yeah, really good issue.
Yep.
We hadn't talked about it in a while, but this was a really good one. So one left. We had the other one wrapped up this week, the digital-only one wrapped up this week, and then this has got one issue left. So very curious to see if they're going to keep this wagon train rolling or not, because it's clearly very popular.
Whatever it takes. Well, I'll follow.
Also,
I'll follow.
It ends, and they've had a great run, which we'll eulogize if it happens. But I'm so happy with Deceased this year. There's been so much great Deceased comic stuff. Mm-hmm. So those are the books we wanted to talk about. There was so many other books. We could have talked about Thor or Daredevil or Firepower. All kinds of things came out this week we could have talked about. But we have to move on to the patron pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where the patrons vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron can vote. This week, the winner in a blowout was MODOK Head Games, #1, written by Jordan Blum and Patton Oswalt, who is voicing MODOK in the upcoming cartoon, drawn by Scott Hepburn. Colors by Carlos Lopez. Letters by Travis Lanham. This was fine.
5 stars.
You have 5.
I loved this. I had a ton of fun reading it, because this is very similar to the reaction that I have about the mime smoking inside his helmet. I expected nothing. And then as it kept going on, I really liked that it stuck with the basic absurdity of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't take it seriously, if I'm not looking for narrative, but I am looking for, AIM agents to be, relentlessly slaughtered.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with it. And I basically didn't expect to. And I know Ryan, Agent M, was always like a big MODOK person. And I was like, I get it. That's funny. But I haven't ever really enjoyed it. But the fact that this seems to be sort of taking place, it's just its own thing that's going on. And he's at war with his own corporation. And to him, that doesn't mean political intrigue. It means he kills a lot of people. And every once in a while, I feel like I've seen MODOK, but I don't think that I've seen it a lot of times where he got, his thing is something organism designed only for killing. And this, they really leaned into that. And I just took it in the spirit of something being very silly and temporary. And it happened, and I had a lot of fun with it. I think there's one bit where he gets all of the they were like, you just sent the organism designed for killing into the armory, and he comes out and he has all the different, you know, weapons and stuff. And I was like, this is very ridiculous. And every time there's any shot of him, like, from behind or in, you know, just like you see, like, the whole of his body, it's very ridiculous.
Funny, scowling MODOK is funny. There's a part where he's sitting at the AIM conference table and they're all having a meeting and he's just scowling. It's funny. It was fine. It was fine. I enjoyed it. I don't know if there's too much MODOK. And I don't know that I necessarily cared about his hallucinations about a MODOK family, but I enjoyed the fact that he was in a power struggle with this woman, this other woman in AIM. And the problem is he's a super genius, and he's also, because he's a robot. I guess he's a robot.
No, he's part organism. I think he's like a cyborgy kind of thing.
Right, because he got the robot brain, so he's very, really smart. And but also, you know, killing machine. I liked the bit where he blows the heist because of his hallucination. So they're all going to get mad at him and fire him. But then he's like, while you are prattling along, I use my robot brain to basically manipulate the stock market and make more money than they would have made in the heist. So like that stuff's all funny. I just, by the end of it, I was like, I don't know if I need a whole miniseries of this. So
I only need 2 to 3 issues.
All right.
That's what I need. And when we do the rating, I'm not going to say 5, but you know, in terms of sort of fun and as a thing that I'm being forced to read, you know, it could go a lot worse, and I really had fun reading it.
Are you going to watch the cartoon?
There's a cartoon? I mean, no. What?
Your kids might like
cartoon?
It.
They don't like anything. If it's not a YouTuber screaming or playing a video game that is a dumb video game to start with, they don't care.
See, your first problem was you allowed the internet into your house.
Well, it's kind of given my career.
you should tell them one day that YouTube's been turned off.
I mean,
they lost their funding and went out of business.
I have the tools to do that.
Yeah, you should just say, oh, this is your first lesson in technology going out of business. Sorry, no more YouTube. Watch this MODOK cartoon.
You've met my older son. You'd hear it from there.
He's kind of like MODOK. He would outthink you.
He would 100% MODOK this place. He has kind of a big head. He would just destroy it.
So yeah, Patton Oswalt is playing MODOK in the cartoon, which is coming.
Is it a MODOK cartoon?
Yeah, it's on Hulu. Yeah, it's called MODOK. It's going to be on Hulu.
It's a series?
Yeah, it's going to be a series. It's going to be next year.
Oh, God.
Jason Blum is one of the people on the show. So this is basically, I'm sorry, Jordan Blum. Jason Blum's a different guy. Jordan Blum and Patton Oswalt created the show, and they both wrote this issue.
All right.
So it's full of all of voice actors from, you'll recognize all of them from various.
Every other cartoon?
Various sitcoms. Okay. You know,
those
Ben
people.
Schwartz, a lot of people from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Beck Bennett from Saturday Night Live. You know, it's full of all the usual characters, but MODOK and I think it's about MODOK's family.
I mean, if AIM agents are going to be blown up, I do like that. But I think I could get by with trailers.
Let's do ratings on MODOK. Head Games, number one. Ratings. I'm doing 3.5 stars. That's my fine rating.
I'm going to go...
3.5.
4.
3 is my fine rating. I'm giving a little bit higher because your enthusiasm got me.
I'm going to go 4.25.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of what it is and what I expected from it, like, you know, it was perfect for what it was. You know, where do you want to read this? I'm going to give it a 4.25. That's what I'm going to do.
Are you sticking with it?
I'll probably read the next one, but I think it's very likely that I will get bored after that.
Okay. So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every page you can vote on the book of the rundown. Thanks for your votes. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. Live.
This is one of those times where I thought, oh, I have to do one of these right now. And I had just switched my gears. So is there any chance you have one written down?
Me?
Yes, you.
That's right. I just took a long sip from my tea as a way of stalling.
Right. Okay, that's fine.
So I can go for Andrew Hunley.
Yeah.
I didn't write this down. This is me thinking on the spot. Andrew Hunley has, so like, you know how like Superman has that power where he can solar flare, but then he can't use it for a long time, or he has no power for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like a power where you can only really use it once. This is like Andrew Hunley is like a nuclear bomb. He can only use this power one time.
Okay.
But what he can do is erase Minecraft from existence. It will never have existed.
Wow.
He can only do it once, and that's all, and then he's done. No more power. But he can remove Minecraft from ever having existed. No one will remember it. It'll never have happened.
I wonder what kind of ripples that will make.
He's like the ultimate. He's like the ultimate weapon for most families. I will activate Andrew Hunley.
You tell you what, it's not so much the Minecraft itself, but the YouTube people that it spawned. That's the problem.
It's all a web.
Huh.
So he's like your football, the president's football.
Right.
I will press this button. I will call Andrew Hunley and I will activate him.
Is he the only one who remembers that Minecraft existed?
He's the only one who remembers.
Wow, that's quite a burden. Well, not really. he sleeps fine at night.
But he hears the songs occasionally. Like, you know, he starts humming them. What is that song? Oh, right. Fuck. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I don't have any kids.
Jamie, well, you've been around me long enough. Jamie Wakefield has the ability to travel to and exist on the moon unsupported by life support.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
But only the moon.
Yep, just the moon. The Earth's moon, Luna.
Not Jupiter?
No. He can fly up to the moon. He can hang out there. The elements won't kill him. He can be on the moon.
Once beyond the moon, though, the elements would kill him. So between the Earth and the moon, he's fine. But once he leaves the sort of bubble of the moon, he would die in space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just he can go to the moon and back. So there's research purposes that can take place. Sure. They can find out some more stuff about the moon, but it's cold.
Also, if he just wants everyone to shut up, he can go to the moon for a while.
Oh, man. That sounds nice.
Everyone's talking about Minecraft. I'm going to the moon.
I'm reading Seven Eves again.
Yep.
And in Seven Eves, the moon blows up. But that actually has everything to do with this, what I'm about to say. There's a bit where they sort of escape, you know, and they're starting to form their society and live in space. And they talk about how men are not as well equipped for space as women. And the men keep taking jobs that require them to go outside in spacesuits, which is more inherently dangerous, but they get to be alone. I thought that was very funny.
Let's do the quick bit now.
The quick bit. Hey, patreon.com/ifanboy is where you can go and you can find a place to donate to the show, help support the show. In doing so, you will be placed on the list to get a patron power at $5 or higher level. Lower than that, or anybody, can get to vote on the patron pick, both of those things that we just did. And I think that adds to the show. So I think that's fun. You can be part of that. There are stretch goals. There's a G.I. Joe Corner show. And after that, the quarterly barbecue show. I don't know how realistic those things are, but they're there if you want to jump in there. Thanks to everybody who has contributed this year especially, but just overall in general. I think you've given back for anything that we've given you many times over, and we appreciate that. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com, which is t-shirt and items that can be made with any of our 8 designs that are up there, including the Stay Home and Read Comics shirt and design.
Oh, I'm wearing that right now.
Yeah, which is still sadly relevant.
I'm a walking billboard for our products.
Half of the proceeds of the sales of that design go to the Comic Book United Fund. We are preparing to send them more money now. New designs are in our mind and will one day be pried out like a frozen rock from ice. ifanboy.com/support. You can find a direct support via PayPal if that's the thing you want to do. If you think, I don't want to deal with any of that other stuff. So here's this, and thank you for what you do. Or whatever. Tax dodge, whatever it is. I don't know how that works, but we are getting at that point of the year where we're telling people, if you need to unload a lot of money for whatever reason, we will help you launder it. Take that back. Not launder.
It's not a launder. It's just we're going to take it. Like if your accountant says, hey, man, you have $12 million you need to get rid of, otherwise you're in big tax trouble.
Right, right.
There's a PayPal button.
I think that's a really good point.
PayPal button for that.
Although, you know, if it is $12 million, maybe contact us directly, because PayPal does take a bite. Anyway, ifanboy.com/Amazon, finally, is you can buy the books that we list on Booksplode. There's always a link on our pick of the week to get that issue, should you so choose, and a general link to buy stuff from Amazon, which is a thing that people seem to be doing right now. And I'm saying, Give us some of that.
I'm also saying, if this is a Brewster's Million type situation where you have to give away a lot of money,
that's good.
This is a great place for it. We don't need to take all of it. We'll just take a little bit. You can give all the rest to, you know, buy a baseball team. You can do whatever you need to do. But
what does it tell you about the 80s that they came up with a movie that was, we need to spend all of this money as soon as possible, and it's really hard?
Josh, I hate to break it to you, but it's a remake from a 1940s film.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Almost all movies are remakes. That's the thing that you discover the more you watch old movies. Hmm. Let's do a couple of quick emails because we can, and we're not super over, but these are quick. Frank J. from Bedford, New Hampshire writes and says, I've been thinking about this question since late August, and I've recently relocated to New Hampshire, Bedford to be exact, for work.
Nice place, by the way. Bedford's a nice place.
It was a truly sad moment when I had to break up with my local comic shop before the move, and I'm on the hunt for a new one in the New England area. I've tried a bunch of places, but I've yet to find one that isn't a t-shirt store pretending to be a comic shop. No hate. I respect what they're doing for business. I just want a full slate of books available to me. Does Josh have any shops he could recommend? I've been willing to go to Boston once the world stops burning and I can travel across state lines again.
Double Midnight Comics. There's one in Manchester, which is pretty close to you, and there's one in Concord. I know the guys who run that. That is, they love comics. That is not a t-shirt. They do like Pokemon stuff and like that to keep it open, but like that's a comic store. They read comics. They love comics. They care about it. Really good guys. Yeah, I have no other recommendations. That's where you should go. Double Midnight. It's not even far from you.
Double Midnight in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. Curbside, you know, like they're doing the right things. They're acting safe. They're good folks.
And that's in England?
Manchester, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay. It's almost like a lot of towns in New England are also named after towns in England.
Really? I had not noticed that.
I don't know if you'd notice that or not. Let me tell you about New York.
Yeah. New Amsterdam.
You know, a couple episodes ago, we had some discussion about Steve's that really touched a nerve.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of response to the Steve discussion.
Yeah, Steve versus
Steven. Steve's in general. We got many emails about Steve's, including this one. Steve from Maryland writes and says, I prefer Steve. My mother calls me Steven. That is all.
Does she always call you Steven or just when she's like upset? Steven! Steven!
It's fun to say.
Are you a Stevie to anybody? What about Stevie? I had a friend Steve-o. In high school. So I think we know what Steve-o's up to. You want to avoid that guy. Fun at the party, but at about 3 a.m., it's going to get real clear.
What movie is this?
What?
What movie is that? They're all named Steve. Steve-o, Steve, Stevie.
I don't know. I was thinking of Steve-o from Jackass.
No, but there's a movie where they're all the code names are Steve code names.
I didn't know.
Oh, it's Inside Man. It's Spike Lee's Inside Man movie.
Oh,
All the bank robbers use Steve, variations of Steve, as their public code names.
That's kind of rad. That's a good movie. I haven't seen it in a long time. I had a friend in high school. He was Steve, and he thought it was too normal, so he decided to be called Stefan for a while. I think he finally dropped that because it was pretentious and stupid. But there's that, yeah. There's Stefan, obviously. You can go to all the greatest Steves.
So... thanks, Steve, for writing in and telling us what you prefer. We were having the debate. I have yet to confirm with the Steve I work with if he prefers Steve or Steven. But
what happened? What's it's been like 2 weeks.
There's been no update because as soon as I said in that show that we're always the first ones in the meetings, it stopped happening.
Okay.
So we haven't had a chance yet. But someone else referred to him as Steve, so I feel a little better about it.
Yeah, but what if you pile on?
Yeah, no, I tend to as soon as the next time we're in a meeting together by ourselves, but okay. It just hasn't happened. Not really worth elongating the meeting by bringing up Steve.
Slack him. Say, yeah. I have this podcast, and I know this is going to sound weird to you, but thousands of people are waiting to find out if you prefer to be called Steve or Steven. Can you please get back?
Dozens of people want to know. Contact at ifanboy.com is where you can write in and get in on the show. Thanks to Steve and Frank.
Steve.
And real quick, holiday schedule. This is our second to last episode of the year in terms of the pick of the week. We have a Books Blowed coming out next week on the 10th. That's going to be talking about our book of the year, which is Dragon Hoops. And then we are going to have our last hangout of the year on December 12th. That's a Saturday. That's open to everybody. So if you're everyone listening to the show can come join the hangout. Might as well come hang out with us. It's our last one for the year and also the last one open to everybody. So if you wanted to do that, if you haven't done one yet, it's going to be our last one. Then the day after that, 12/13, is our last pick week of the year. And then the following week is 12/20. That's our all media show. And then there'll be no shows again until January 10th, which will be Pick League 762. And then somewhere in there, either December or January, most likely January, will be the Toxplode that Josh owes you.
This is a wrong statement.
No?
I have a Toxplode scheduled for this coming week to be recorded. It is a rad guest who I'm very excited to talk to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, somewhere in there. I guess you're right.
You're recording it, man?
Tuesday.
Well, then maybe it comes out on the 17th.
Well, we'll schedule that in, but it's not super distance, and it is not in doubt.
Okay. Well, I didn't say it wasn't coming. I just said it hasn't happened yet. So who knows?
It's gonna happen. It's on. I'm living up to my.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up.
Okay, let's wrap it up. iFanboy.com for all of our podcasts. Everything that was ever written is still there. I mean, not everything. It's not the Collaborate Congress or anything, but you know what I'm saying. Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/iFanboy or following at iFanboy on Twitter, and also at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, which is a visual medium, so it features the best of the week in panels, and many of that information is there, but we also have to put a picture along with it. Follow us individually on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and JA Flanagan. Subscribe to our YouTube page over at youtube.com/iFanboy, and you can watch along as if they were new with our old video show uploads. This past week, it was the first It Came From the Storage Unit mini, which was Connor's bit, but also totally literal. At New York Comic Con 2008. 2008 is the year for us, by the way. It is the 2008 is to iFanboy as 1986 is to comics. And then finally, there's a spotlight on Grant Morrison, who is Scottish. Your turn.
Yes. Yeah, and that was from Grant Morrison Week. We did a whole week of shows about Grant Morrison.
Wow.
And finally, if you like the show, write us a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, which I'm finally using and I hate. And wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you listen to them, if you can do a rating or a review, that is a great place to do it. And it helps shows. As we mentioned all the time, it helps the algorithm, helps people find shows. And we appreciate that. It's a nice little year-end present for any podcast you listen to. Just leave a rating. That's all. Even better than that is tell your friends word of mouth. Help spread the love about the shows you enjoy throughout the year. Any show, our show, whatever podcast you listen to, whatever fucking show your Spotify says. Everyone needs to know what everyone's Spotify says, apparently. And whatever your show is, tell people about it. And thank everyone who posted about our show. But man, I never thought I needed to know what everyone is fucking listening to this year. But apparently I do.
I don't know who all those bands are. I don't use Spotify.
I don't either. I don't have a Spotify account.
Yeah, I did for a little bit, and I thought, this is pointless. I don't need this. I thought I'd try it, but I mean, I have Apple Music. It has its own things or whatever, but you can do an Apple Music report, but mine's all screwed up because my kids listen to terrible music on their account. You know what they listen to? They listen to, have you ever heard of like where they take pop songs and then turn them into Minecraft songs? They listen to that stuff. So it's like doubling down on stuff I don't like.
I think you should email Andrew Hunley.
Listen, Andrew and I are there's a question of cash involved. So we have to work that out. I mean, it's he's only got the one shot at it, so.
Right. All right, well, until next week in our final Pick of the Week episode, I'm Connor. Of the year. Not ever.
Easy pass. Oh,
yeah.
I'm Josh.
See you next week.
Bye.
It's almost here.